Apex Legends is coming to mobile, and more coming up on today's episode of The Latest in Tech News. Hey Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is The Latest in Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and the feature story we'll be looking at today is, well, Apex Legends joining the ranks of Fortnite and PUBG and securing their smartphone app dominance, or, well, we'll see how that works out. We'll also be looking at some tech news today, including Facebook talking privacy, but Google actually building it, Google's new Nest privacy promise, which may not bode well for some people, Google News full coverage and podcast results coming to search, definitely interesting there. Also be looking at why tech giants are so desperate to provide your voice assistant. As for gadget news, well, we'll be looking at Samsung canceling Galaxy Fold pre-orders. And for gaming news, we'll be looking at the Days Gone review. But first, did you know that Facebook has a blue color scheme because the creator, Mark Zuckerberg, cannot see the colors red and green? And also, did you know that around 20% of all YouTube videos are music-related? Suffice it to say, it's more than MTV has to offer, even though they're supposed to be music video related. But I digress. Moving right along, today in tech history. Well, did you know what happened today in tech history? If you didn't, well, good thing you're listening. Today is May 7th. 2019, and on this day in history, the IBM 704 was introduced. IBM announces the IBM 704 data processing system in 1954, the world's first mass-produced computer to feature floating-point arithmetic hardware. Besides this ultra-geeky distinction, the IBM 704 will leave its mark in computer history before it is discontinued on April 7, 1960. Both the Fortran and Lisp programming languages were first developed for the IBM 704, as well as the first music application called Music. Physicist John Larry Kelly, Jr. of Bell Labs will synthesize speech for the first time in history on an IBM 704. Not bad for a mainframe computer. And also, on this day, in 1895, Otto Steiger was issued a patent for his millionaire calculating machine. For the next 40 years, Switzerland's Hans Egli manufactured 4,700 machines, which weighed in at 120 pounds each. Oh my goodness, you definitely had to work out after that. So, now you're asking me, what did it do? Well, the millionaire was notable in its ability to perform direct multiplication, which meant a user could multiply a number by a single digit with a single rotation of the handle. So, thank goodness we finally got a calculator, otherwise we would have been still stuck cranking. It would have been difficult, that's all I can say. So, with that out of the way, let's head on over to today's feature story. Alright, Apex Legends is coming to mobile. Well, just like Fortnite and PUBG, and by the way, if you guys are interested, the show notes for the articles that we've covered in today's show can be found by going to technewsgadget.net/111111, and you can get all the articles in there. And if you're listening via podcast, all you have to do is click more details or tap or swipe or however you do that, and the articles links will be right there for you to tap and load. They do include photos and videos, so if you're listening, well, now you have another reason to, watch as well. Matter of fact, if you're watching this on YouTube.com/TechNewsGadget. Enjoy! There's all the videos to go along with it. So, as we all know, Apex Legends is hugely popular on PS4, Xbox One, and PC, and mostly due to the fact that how it was launched and released, and now it's coming to a new platform and a new market. As part of publisher Electronic Arts' earnings report today, CEO Andrew Wilson confirmed that a mobile version of the Battle Royale game is in the works, while EA is also in advanced negotiation to launch Apex Legends in China. We are hugely excited about the future of Apex Legends. Engagement is strong, and we have big plans for the Legends and the world they compete in. We're in advanced negotiation to bring Apex Legends to China and to mobile, and we'll update you on timeframes when those negotiations are concluded, said Wilson in the report. Apex Legends coming to mobile is really no big surprise, as the mobile game market is massive and represents another way for EA to make money from the game. The other Battle Royale juggernauts, PUBG and Fortnite, also have their own mobile editions. And in Korea, another major market for games, Wilson pointed out that EA is self-publishing Apex Legends there. The game offers an opportunity for us to build a direct connection with our players there, and we hope to be able to leverage this for other games. In his prepared remarks, Wilson noted that Apex Legends is the fastest growing title in EA history. By EA's latest count, the game reached 50 million players. He also noted that almost 30% of Apex Legends players are new to EA, which is good news for the publisher. We're incredibly excited and humbled by the passion that fans around the world have for Apex Legends. We're now very focused on delivering for this massive global community with a long-term live service, including new seasons with more robust Battle Pass content, new legends, and exciting evolutions to the in-game environment. This is only just the beginning for Apex Legends. The first details about the game Season 2 will be announced at the EA Play event in June. So, yeah, well, in case you also missed it, during that earnings call, they announced that BioWare's new IP Anthem failed to meet its expectations. However, the company remains committed to expanding and improving the title, and who knows, maybe it'll turn into something of a redemption, kind of like No Man's Sky, in a couple years to come, or maybe never. We'll never know. So, but that's not the main point of the news article today. What do you guys think about Apex Legends? Have you been playing? I have to say, for me personally, for the time that I have played in it, I haven't been able to play many matches recently because of running the show. But from what I did get to play, it was very simple to use, very intuitive, smooth. I enjoyed it very much. It wasn't really that complicated to understand how to run around or shoot or what your character does. Although maybe just a little bit depending on a character, but you ease yourself into it. The learning curve really wasn't that difficult. Now, as for becoming advanced and becoming good at the game, that obviously takes dedication and practice, as with anything else. So suffice it to say, don't plan on me going pro anytime soon, but if you go pro, that's awesome. We'd love to hear you go pro and watch your content. By the way, if you have any thoughts that you want to share, be sure to leave a like and a comment down below in the comment section, and we'd love to join in on the conversation and see what you have to say. Moving on. All right, in the tech news realm today, well, you know, with Facebook hyping it up and talking privacy, well, Google actually built it. So, according to Mark Zuckerberg, he said the future is private. And according to Sundar Pichai, the present is private. Now, while both CEOs made protecting user data a central theme of their conference keynotes this month, Facebook's product updates were mostly vague vaporware, while Google's were either ready to ship or demo. The contrast highlights the divergence in strategy between the two tech giants. And, well, okay, one would expect Google to do so because Google's been around a lot longer. They have a lot more foot in the game as it is, a lot more backing behind them, as it were. So long as they're able to adjust with the times, I don't really see any problem here. For Facebook, privacy is a talking point meant to boost confidence in sharing, deter regulators, and repair its battered image. For Google, privacy is functional, going hand-in-hand with on-device data processing to make features faster and more widely accessible. Everyone wants tech to be more private, but we must discern between promises and delivery. Like mobile, on-demand, AI, and blockchain before it, privacy can't be taken at face value. We deserve improvements to the core of how our software and hardware work, not cosmetic add-ons and incantations no one's really asking for. At Facebook's F8 last week, we heard from Zuckerberg about how privacy gives us the freedom to be ourselves, and he reiterated how that would happen through ephemerically secure data storage. He said Messenger and Instagram Direct will become encrypted eventually, which Zuckerberg had already announced in January and detailed in March. We didn't get the clear history feature that Zuckerberg made the privacy centerpiece of last year's conference, or anything about the data transfer project that's been silent for 10 months since it's revealed. So either you're forgetting about what the heck's going on, Mark, or you just don't know. What users did get was a clumsy joke from Zuckerberg about how I get that a lot of people aren't sure that we're serious about this. I know that we don't exactly have the strongest reputation on privacy right now, to put it lightly, but I'm committed to doing this well. Well, no one laughed at that joke. At least he admitted that it's not going to happen overnight. But it shouldn't have to. Facebook made its first massive privacy mistake in 2007 with Beacon, which quietly relayed your offsite e-commerce and web activity to your friends. It had 12 years, a deal with the FTC promising to improve, countless groups and apologies, democracy-shaking Cambridge Analytica data scandal that I'm not going to get into, and hours of being grilled by Congress to get serious about the problem. That makes it clear that if the future is private, then the past wasn't. Facebook is too late here to receive the benefit of the doubt. So at Google's I.O., rather, we saw demos from Pachai showing how our work on privacy and security is never done, and we want to do more to stay ahead of constantly evolving user expectations. Instead of waiting to fall so far behind that users demand more privacy, Google has been steadily working for it the past decade since it introduced Chrome Incognito mode. It's changed directions away from using Gmail content to target ads and allowing any developer to request access to your email, though there are plenty of sins to atone for. Google's not staying free on this one. Now, when a company is hit with scandals, it's typically over its frightening efficiency, as with its canceled Project Maven AI military tech, not so much as creepiness. So, with that being said, what do you think? Do you think Facebook's doing a better job with privacy? Do you think they'll actually do a better job? What do you think about Google? Google doing good job, bad job? This is all I'm going to read about the article so far. So if you want to read more about it, head over to the show notes for this episode and you can read up on the entire article. And it goes into more depth about what Google's doing and what Facebook's doing. So, albeit to say, well, time remains to see how this will pan out. Moving on to some more news. Apparently Google's in the news again because their new Nest privacy promise is kind of a bit iffy. You see, Google wants to be inside your home. It wants to sell you cameras, alarm systems, and voice assistants to make your life, and maybe its targeted advertising business, that much easier. But there's a problem. People don't necessarily trust big tech companies or their camera-equipped smart displays right now. And while Google may not have had that scandal on its hands that Facebook did, a couple recent incidents with its Nest division could have given buyers pause. A string of digital break-ins where Nest cameras let strangers deliver fake nuclear bomb threats and spy on babies over the internet, not exaggerating, and the revelation that the Nest secure alarm system had a secret microphone that buyers never knew about. Now, that aside, as Google announced, it's going to sell a device that's not all different from the Facebook portal, whose most every review wondered whether you should really invite a Facebook camera into your home. Facebook also decided to publicly take ownership for privacy going forward. Now, here's the high-level overview. And while Google didn't actually share them during today's Google keynote, they're available for you to read on the web. The overview is, we'll explain our sensors and how they work. The technical specifications for our connected home devices will list all audio, video, and environmental and activity sensors, whether enabled or not. And you can find the types of data these sensors collect and how that data is used in various features on our dedicated Help Center page. We'll explain how your video footage, audio recordings, and home environment sensor readings are used to offer helpful features and services, and our commitment for how we'll keep this data separate from advertising and ad personalization. We'll explain how you can control and manage your data, such as providing you with the ability to access, review, and delete audio and video stored with your Google account at any time. But the full document gets way more specific than that, and remarkably, a number of the promises aren't the typical wishy-washy legalese you might expect. Some are totally unambiguous. Some of them go against the grain, like how Nest won't let you turn off the recording light on your camera anymore. So here's what they said. Your home is a special place. It's where you get to decide who you invite in. It's the place for sharing family recipes and watching babies take first steps. You want to trust the things you bring into your home, and we're committed to earning that trust. Now, genuine question for you, particularly if you wind up reading through the whole thing. Does this set your mind at ease? Are you any more willing or interested in placing a Google-branded camera in your home? Well, the author of this article is of two minds. Part of them is impressed by the plain English and by Google's willingness to sacrifice the public relations air gap by adding its own name to the Nest division. It's Google Nest now, and they apparently already have cameras in their home that they don't necessarily trust or don't work as well as they'd like them to, might be in the market for new ones. But the other part of them worries that it's just a shrewd marketing campaign, a way to sweep previous concerns under the rug, and Google could change its mind and policies at any time. Obviously, there's a link to the full privacy promise on the website as well, so you can go take a look at it. But with this privacy thing coming up again and again and again and again, I don't know. I'm actually thinking to myself, I really should just go in depth and get a really interesting article on this on Tech News Gadget website, because it's something that I've been thinking about I don't really want to express my thoughts right now because they would come out jumbled and piecemeal. So I have a lot of thinking to do and how I'm going to construct the article and maybe if I'm going to talk to any individuals or analysts or people could help me with this. We'll see how that goes. All I can say is that, well, it's a concern, and on some it kind of really isn't, but doesn't really matter? I mean, goodness. I mean, I can understand the extent to why you would want it to, but really, to some extent, it doesn't really matter. Well, I don't want Google to know that I'm blinking my eyes 500 times a minute. Okay, good. Who the heck cares? Well, I do. In my eyes, they blink if they want to. Okay. Now we're getting a little bit ridiculous, you see? And if you didn't, well, let me know with a comment, and I'll see if I can get back to you on that. And I might not even have a full argument left to reply to. I might just even say I don't know. So, that's my thoughts so far. Let's move on to the next article. So, also in Google's I/O developer conference kicking off, Sundar Pichai began the keynote talking about search, Google's bread and butter. Now, we've all seen the evolution over time that Google has made the dominant search engine and the go-to for basically everyone, but this keynote brings the next step in that evolution. When you search for a relevant topic, search will fill you... Wow, I can't read. Search will show you full news coverage relating to that entry and podcasts about it. Interesting. Podcasts. Now, we understood that Google Podcasts, thank goodness they left Google Play and finally turned into something worthy of being podcast ready. Now they're moving into integrating it with the search engine. In the keynote, the example they used was the black hole image from earlier this year. Just search black hole and demo showed off news stories about the imaging, the name and its meaning, and so on. In short, it creates a highly contextual search result that helps you get the important info fast. Podcasts can be added to a listen later playlist for your commute home or in your home. For those wondering, news and podcasts will be coming to search later this year, according to Google. And they got some photos that go along with it. So it's kind of interesting. It's got links to stories, YouTube videos, and then it even has links to podcasts about the story. So stuff you should know, how stuff works, what people are saying about it. Interesting, interesting stuff. So I'm excited about this. Man, I love podcasting. I can't wait. I'm excited about what this means. Finally integrated into a search engine. Bing, what do you guys got coming? Microsoft? We're waiting. Moving on to another one of our last tech news articles. Why tech giants are so desperate to provide your voice assistant. Now, I'm only going to read a little bit about this. This article comes to us from the Harvard Business Review. I'll let you guys read the rest of it and share your thoughts, of which I'm always interested in. You can share them on Twitter at TechNewsGadget or on this video at youtube.com/TechNewsGadget. And if you're listening to the podcast, hey, head on over to our show, wherever it is. There's a comment section there. You can leave your thoughts. But my question is, well, why are the top tech companies in the world spending billions of dollars investing in voice assistants and smart speakers that lose them money every quarter? I bet you didn't even know this. Amazon reportedly has 10,000 employees working on Alexa. Teardown analysis suggests that the Google Home Mini is sold at a loss every time it's discounted, which is quite frequently. Samsung has introduced a dedicated button on its phones for Bixby, which consumers regularly remap to use Google Assistant instead. It's really funny. And Microsoft is no longer trying to compete with Alexa or Google Assistant, but is still investing in Cortana. Now, each of these companies and others have different reasons for their continued investment. Some are attempting to protect a dominant franchise, such as online commerce for Amazon, and search advertising in Google's case. Others are trying to break into spaces where they have been excluded, such as digital content distribution, display advertising, search, and commerce. Now, a couple have both scenarios in mind. You can only understand the voice platform wars by first recognizing that voice assistants specifically represent both a platform and a user interface shift comparable to the web and smartphones. The key difference is that these new platforms are neither based on open standards nor on relatively open access to consumers. Voice assistants introduce a proprietary intermediary into all digital consumer interactions. This scenario both excites and frightens the leading tech companies that carved out enviable positions in the earlier web and smartphone platform wars. See, voice assistants represent the third key UI and technology platform shift of the past three decades, following the web in the 90s and smartphones about 10 years ago. Each successive UI shift changed the way humans interacted with and accessed digital content. Web pages gave us click, where we surfed using our mouse and activated buttons and hyperlinks. Smartphones introduced touch, swipe, and pinch to billions of consumers and replaced web pages with apps. Both of these transitions required consumers to learn a new language for interacting with tech. Now, the shift to voice doesn't require any training. Users simply speak naturally. Each of these UI changes was accompanied by a new technology platform. The World Wide Web was built on the back of the internet. The PC proliferation enabled web pages to be easily accessed. Smartphone and mobile operating systems such as iOS and Android were important developments, but the app economy also relied on the introduction of cloud computing for efficiently delivering content along with regular feature updates and performance enhancements. Voice computing relies on artificial intelligence for speech recognition and natural language understanding. It is also being used to dynamically improve user experiences. So, the article goes on to explain a little bit more about the web and mobile introducing new ways to conduct business, enhance the efficiency of old methods, specific companies dominating in different areas and voice bots being used. But it's kind of interesting, seeing as how it really has no, like, collection or open source. It's all, like, Microsoft, here's their funnel. Google, here's their funnel. Amazon, here's their funnel. Samsung, here's their funnel. And they're all, like, weirdly enough, they're all working on the exact same thing for speech, but there's like four or five different ones and then some, each with their own. You guys, idiots, you'd have it so much easier to nail down if you all had like a common thing connecting all of them so that you could save so much time in R&D and money and research and trying to figure out how this all works, and you could get to your solution faster. But that's my thoughts. What do you guys think? Is this a good idea? Bad idea? Let me know. In case you're wondering, why are you always asking for comments or your thoughts? Well, because this show is mainly made possible because of listeners like you, and the show reports on the things that are of interest to you, so I'd like to know what you guys think. So if you didn't like it, if you did like it, if there's something you want to know, let me know. You know? Got it? I think so. All right, now moving on to some gadget news. And I know you guys just saw me click over on the screen. But Samsung is apparently canceling Galaxy Fold pre-orders. So thanks a lot, stupid journalists, for lighting your smartphones on fire. But Samsung said today that it cannot predict when it will be able to ship its innovative Galaxy Fold smartphone. As such, it will automatically cancel all pre-orders unless customers notify it otherwise. If we do not hear from you and we have not shipped by May 31st, your order will be canceled automatically, reads a Samsung email sent to those who pre-ordered a $2,000 folding handset. So if you got the email, great. If you didn't and you pre-ordered, now you know. Briefly positioned as an example of Samsung's technical acumen, the Galaxy Fold has become an embarrassment to the smartphone giant. Other phone makers, especially Huawei, quickly announced superior designs, and then reviewers who received the first Galaxy Fold units immediately began reporting serious design flaws, so Samsung obviously canceled it all and promised to fix whatever was wrong. And that's going to prove difficult, if not impossible, as the Galaxy Fold will obviously require a major redesign. It'd be kind of surprising if the Fold ships this year. But we'll see how everything goes. I don't know. I was really looking forward to a phone. A foldable phone. Just give me something cool. Give me something fun. Give me something that actually works. Otherwise, I'm going to drop it in the pool and see how long it floats for before it bubbles to the bottom. And moving on to our last article. Of course, it's a gaming article today. Days Gone review. Now, this comes to us from DreadCentral.com. Where, they looked at the PS4 version of Days Gone. Now, article goes on to state, is it just me, or is there something quite a bit quaint about open-world zombie survival games? They were all the rage for indie devs trying to make it big like 8 years ago. DayZ, 7 Days to Die, State of Decay, Project Zomboid. Even mainstream titles like Call of Duty and Red Dead Redemption got in on the zombie action. Heck, even Fortnite did. There's a Spartan logic to this, as zombies are basically a way to justify not having to program AI. Although, I can agree with half of that statement. The other half is the AI that used to program zombies that for games that I really, really enjoy, it's not easy. You gotta have a lot of programming behind it. Cynicism aside, there's no denying that the perfect zombie survival game is a distant, shimmering fantasy of many gamers. Most of us have a zombie survival plan, and being able to see that brought to life in gaming form would be like Walter White inventing supermeth, whatever that means. Before you get your hopes up, Days Gone is not that game many thought it might be. When first announced at E3 2016, the reveal trailer showed a promising duel between a biker and a massive swarm of zombies. It was the kind of, well, coolness that was generally reserved to describe men who have won real-world fights with bears. The way the zombies poured over each other in a seemingly endless consuming time with no signs of stopping is the stuff of genuine nightmares. The subsequent 2017 trailer showcased the main character infiltrating a camp, luring a nearby zombie horde, and then blowing up a wall to allow the beast to do the heavy lifting. Totally awesome. Unfortunately, this is largely absent from the final game. No, it turns out that Days Gone is not the game we thought it would be. Absent is much of the living world and unique interaction showcased in the E3 trailers. It's there in bits and pieces, but certainly not to the scale where we were led to believe. It seems to be where much of the criticism is coming from. The game is getting skewered by many critics, and you can see why. If you go in expecting a deep survival crafting game in an open, living world, you will be sorely disappointed. You'll be much happier if you go in with a blank slate. For all the things that Days Gone doesn't do, it does what it does very effectively. So they're going to front load their criticism there, as much of what brings Days Gone down comes in the first 10 hours. No, that's not a typo. The first whopping 10 hours of the game are a confusing mess. Launched off with a far too brief and disjointed flashback, we're quickly introduced to main character Deacon, St. John, and his best buddy Boozer, and a soon-to-be-dead pilot device slash wife Sarah, and it's the eve of the apocalypse, and a strange infection is turning people into, wait for it, freakers. Yep, they called the zombies freakers, and they are sticking with it. The quick cut editing and rushed pacing of this section are so bad that I got Suicide Squad vibes. It felt like Days Gone was trying very hard to pull the emotional punches of The Last of Us, but in the first 30 seconds. The game then jumps 2 years into the future, where Boozer and Deacon are mid-pursuit of a guy that stole some stuff. After the first tutorial missions, Days Gone starts in earnest. The world opens up, and two camps that serve as merchants and mission hubs. So, goes on. You have all this stuff going on. To be clear, this is the part where Days Gone kind of sucks. Way too many characters are introduced without a whole lot of payoff. We're asked to immediately care about the fate of a best friend we know nothing about. None of the bad guys are properly established, and the busy work quests have very little payoff beyond better guns and motorcycle upgrades. So the author got sick of playing and actually dreading that the map would open itself into more pointless busy work. But beyond the 10 hours, it finally gets more interesting, finally gets more fun. So I'm going to scroll to the bottom of it, unless you want to read the whole review, in which case you certainly can. It'll be the last link in the article show notes. Now, it's not the ride that you'd expect, but Days Gone is one heck of a ride. It's a slow burn, but when it does get there, it delivers. There's enough variety in characters, missions, and tasks to keep you consistently engaged. Most importantly, there's sufficient endgame challenge to reward all the time you put into maxing out your arsenal. I've seen critics openly state they find it boring, but I couldn't disagree more. Past the first two zones, I have never felt like the grind was an actual grind. It isn't a perfect game, but that's some of the highest praise an open-world game can earn. And the rating that they gave on Days Gone is 4 out of 5 stars. So if you can make it through the first act, the freaker hordes might just win you over. So for those of you who have played Days Gone, is it worth the hype? Is it a fun game? Do you enjoy it? Me personally, I'm waiting for, if I could think of that game. Dying Light 2. I'm waiting for that game to come out. That game was fun. You do the parkour, and you do the triple somersault backflip, and then like, and you shoot the zombie like no look 360 point blank in the head, like, oh man, from like 400 meters away. Nail it. It's amazing, this game. And then at night they run, and when they run fast, they jump, and they try to kill you. It's actually one of the funner games that I very much enjoyed in the zombie genre. This is me talking, not the author of the article. So that's the game that I'm looking forward to. But if you enjoy Days Gone, be sure to let me know. And with that, that wraps up this episode of The Latest in Tech News. Thanks for tuning in, guys. New episodes every weekday. The Latest in Tech News can be found on every major platform, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, Overcast, and more. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, let us know by clicking that like button and leaving a comment. Also, double check that you are subscribed so that you don't miss the next episode. And if you're listening via podcast, be sure to leave us a review out on iTunes. I'm your host, Taylor Merrick, and remember, for the latest in tech, gadgets, and gaming news, visit technewsgadget.net. Pretty much, keep being awesome, guys. I'll see you on the flip side.